This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR. I'm Franny Kelly. Ali Shaheed Muhammad is not here with us today because he's moving.
I'm LP.
I'm Killer Mike, and we are Run the Jewels.
This year, we iller than a nun in a club shot, getting double penetrated in a dope spot. Buy two hard pipe in, niggas on the orders, I'ma sell us to the soundtrack of Tupac. I'll beat you to a pulp, no fiction. Tarantino flow, new jewels and Vincent. Blow marijuana smoke, no instant. Exhale in the face of innocent infant. Also, I had, look what I did, shit.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I wanted to start by kind of questioning some of the received wisdom about you guys, which is that the fact that you have come together is elevating your game in some way. Do you feel that that's true? Or do you think it's really more of a coincidence?
It's not a coincidence. Okay. I disagree with a lot of things written about us sometimes, you know, but that's true. That's true. I mean, if we didn't feel that way, we wouldn't be working together. I mean, I think that we found something that sparked both of us, and so that's why we've churned out essentially together three albums in the last couple of years. So,
yeah.
I've been around long enough to know that type of creative spark is rare to hold on to. So I do think that that's true for me, and I feel it's true, and I think that we also push each other to just be at our best as you know. So
yeah,
I really do think it's true.
It's not like you're saying they elevated from mediocre to good. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not. You're saying these guys are good and got great. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you know, I'm a sports fan, so I know you two guys aren't, but. It's like Clyde Drexler.
I am. We talked about that.
Well, there we go.
Drop the facade. We're on to you.
Yeah. I know it's like when Clyde Drexler and Akeem Olajuwon hooked up in Houston. Like, Clyde Drexler had been dope his whole career. He was playing in Portland, you know what I mean? And Akeem kind of hit his boy, like, yo, come to Houston. And that became, like, dynasty levels, you know what I mean? So that's what I look at it. Like, you know, when people say y'all got better together, you know, I don't take it as, you know, that's what friends and dope work relationships do. Things are supposed to make you better. So if getting better, and I've already been pretty dope, is at coming at this time, then I welcome it, and hopefully we'll just continue to do that.
One time for the real and the human. One time for the real and the human.
One time for the peel and the reaper, man. It's the young black leader to the people, man. If your girl fine, nigga might eat her, man. I'm talking middle of the mall like a Peter, man. A nigga sky high now like Jesus, man. And no law, dear reaper, so pong. Got an anti-gravity and nigga stay flow. This nigga raw me, bitch, but bitch, so my pop, probably the tip play old me. One half best tag team ever. The motherfellas are aight, we belt. Anybody disagree, they jealous. And anybody don't, just motherfucking yo. Just yo. Fuck the boss, I'm the goddamn owner. And I smell like YSL and marijuana. Don Drake with paper, might pull a slick cape. Sexteer, tell me fuck you, I told her you gone. And I've been this way, y'all. And I've been this way, bitch. And I've been this way, bitch. And I've been this way, y'all. And I've been this way, bitch. And I've been this way, bitch.
Sharp like knife, a better buck, I'm stuck in the guts of the night. And I'm
ready on the right.
Please pass that already, alright. Can't Fetty, he's steady on the mic. What the fuck else can he do right? Step arm heavy and he brought mic. Never step light, no fair fights. Go. We got the drugs y'all wanted. Take a suck on the tail of a common. I'm so high, you a hobbit. Dick level, please back up off it. Better off dead like Paul is. Your name don't ring, go starless. Me and Mike, we a friend to the farmers. If we run out, we might cop your whole harvest.
Charles Aaron wrote a review in Wondering Sound that I thought was, like, pretty incredible, except for one part when he called both of your career paths bittersweet.
It's been bittersweet for me.
Okay.
I wouldn't object to that.
Been pretty bittersweet for me.
I wouldn't object to that. I mean, we both have fought for a long time to do what we do. And we've both come on to the cusp of having big, you know, I think we've had steady careers, and we've also been on the cusp of blowing up and didn't really, you know, like, I've always been happy with my career, but you want to go further, you know, if you can, you want to see, you want to be in front of more people. You want to have that moment. You want people to know your music more after, you know, but I'm certainly not bitter, but I can understand why he sort of sees it that way. Maybe.
Yeah, I definitely was. Absolutely. Okay. I was.
When?
Absolutely. After Pledge 2, I was probably most bitter.
Uh-huh.
You know, people who follow The Pledge and just general public, like, that was a seminal album. Like,
yeah.
You know, I was in such a dark place in that record. That record was more so motivating me out of my own depression. Mm. And it affected people in a very real way. You know, when I said fire your boss and be your own boss, you know, I can point to people now that have started businesses based on that record. Mm. You know, my man who has DJ Tabor's barbershop out in Tacoma, one of the largest and best barbershops, is like, yo, that record made me quit what I was doing, go to barber school, become a business person. You know what I mean? That, you know, kids who've graduated medical school are like, that is the record I listened to. So that, but for it not to translate in the way that I thought it would, you know, was hurtful. Pledge 3? Because of the company I was with, SMC at the time, they didn't do the job they could have or should have. Love the people over there that brought some of them with me in this new endeavor. But the shining light of hope at that time was when the Rolling Stone put Ric Flair's top 50 records that year. I didn't know what I was going to do next, but I knew I was angry enough not to quit.
I'm going on tour, and I'm going to show anybody out there that thinks for 1 second that maybe I'm second-guessing myself, that I am the greatest of all time, forever and ever. One surprise. Woo! I'm back.
To make it out the ice cold streets of the city, you better have a Christopher Word game with it. You better have a dance game similar to Diddy, or play B-ball above the rim like Smitty, Josh, Chris, Bosh, Paul, Gasol, or any other nigga that ball and tall. I used to sell it white as Paul Wall. Gave my young boy 3 of them in the mall, and he gon' bring me 75K back tomorrow. You know what big about. You know what bigger do. Ice water in my veins, hard pumping igloo. I'm familiar with the money, so who the fuck is you? What the fuck you do? Where the fuck you from? Who you knowing? Somebody get this nigga, I don't know him. And I'm about to jet off on his ass like a Boeing. Going, gone. So.
Going into the record, I was just like, when I recorded Pledge 3, I didn't let anybody in the studio with me. It was just me and the engineer. I cut virtually everyone off. And made what I thought was, for those, like, you know, the Pledge 3 was like classic records. And the fact that it even got called a mixtape on some site types was hurtful. So I went through it. But with rap music, it changed the course of everything for me. Because even more than, hey, I want money, I want to be recognized, I don't want to die and not be recognized as one of the best rappers to ever come out of the South. Because I am. And not because I worked hard to be. And my examples are people who deserve the accreditation they've gotten, the Bun B's, the Scarfaces, and that's who I wanted to be, but I didn't recognize what I was asking for. You have to be, Bun B told me, you got to be careful what you wish for. We wanted to be the underground kings, and that's what we became. You know, you get what I'm saying? I wanted a career like Scarface and Bun, and that comes with suffering. That comes with being ignored. That comes with having to prove and prove yourself over. So I can say that the bitterness of the sweetness, the bitter before the sweet, has been the best thing for me, because what it did, I will never get complacent. You can't tell me that I'm complacent, because I'm not even competing with your perception of me. I'm competing with whatever I did last. And I try to make sure whatever I did last was on such a tier that I didn't think it was possible. So it has certainly been a bittersweet career for me. And I'm very glad to be in the land of milk and honey now versus where I just came from.
Yeah. On the subject of that, before I lose this thought, because I am legitimately stoned.
I am not. This is usually the reverse. I'm dead sober.
It is. I think that me and Mike. Well, I never got to the bitter part. I did get to the afraid part. I did get to a point when I started to wonder, is it going to be that I just have this sort of ongoing career of making these critically acclaimed records where I just sort of stay at a similar level? And if so, okay, but then you know that the inevitable is that you then taper off. And so seeing the you know, getting to a point where you're thinking to yourself, that fear in the back of your head comes, where it's like, it's not about money, it's not about fame, like Mike said, it's about how much you love doing what you do. Yeah. And for me, all I've ever done in my life is this. I mean, I made a choice not to do school for this. I made a choice essentially to become a useless human other than this. You know, like, this is all I got. So if I'm not getting somewhere, then that's a problem. Because, you know, eventually everybody transitions out of it. Eventually everybody has to go away, essentially. I'll never go away from music, but eventually it changes for you, and you're going to, you know, we're not going to be 50 years old necessarily doing Run the Jewels albums.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I saw Primo last night. He's like, I'm 48. I'm not done.
Primo's a god.
All right.
Primo's a god.
I have my friend Robert Hicks to thank. Robert and I grew up in a neighborhood full of boys, and that pushes you from a competitive level. I grew up with Cameron Dollar, 1995 NCAA championship with UCLA. I grew up with Stanley Pritchard, Miami Dolphins tight end, one of the premier tight ends when he was in the league. Robert Hicks was my best friend since kindergarten. He got his opportunity to play for the Buffalo Bills in 1997. His career ended like 4 or 5 years later because of a knee injury. But I talked to him when I was really ready to quit. I was really ready to just forget it. I opened some businesses. I'm savvy enough to figure this out. I'm tired of hitting my head against a wall, of being away from my children, you know. And Robert called me and told me, you're crazy. He said, think about everybody we grew up with. Cam, Stanley, me. And I thought about everybody we grew up with in the neighborhood, and everybody we went to school with. I went to school with him 14 years from kindergarten through to graduation. And he said, 13, he said, Michael, of all the people that had a chance to live their dream, you're the only one who's still doing it. And until they put you out, don't quit. And that was a big part of why Pledge 3 got done and rap music was done with so much enthusiasm. Because this was a friend who I saw actually got a chance to live his dream too, you know. Floated me the first money to press my first copies of the Slumlords up. And he just told me, like, as long as you're able to do it, don't. So I owe him a lot. I never thanked him publicly, but, you know, Bobby, your birthday's coming up. Happy birthday, and I love you and thank you very much. Because I don't know if I wouldn't have had that talk, him and CeeLo, one half of the Beat Bullies who produced Kryptonite. If those two guys wouldn't have talked to me during that time, I most certainly would not be sitting here today.
I mean, you know, we're a group comprised of two dudes who met at Crossroads, mm-hmm. who had come out of Crossroads and deciding to go out and hunt and kill. You
yep.
know, like, we had both gone individually through some shit that,
yep.
where we found ourselves staring at different directions, and it could have gone either way for either one of us. When we met, we had both individually decided we were going to go for ours, you know,
yep.
like more playing around.
Straight up.
And because we had both seen things fall apart. I had basically been reduced to rubble, you know, I had.
And this crazy dude from the South just heard him like, this guy's the most genius guy in the world. The world has to know this. I'm not going to be happy till every black person on earth knows who LP is.
And I'm going to...
Yeah, I'm going to make him the Justin Timberlake of hardcore rap music. Every black person is going to know my friend.
And we're going to choose a select group of white people to know who you are.
Yeah, that's all.
You don't want the wrong ones
don't
paying attention.
Don't want that. Don't want them coming for me.
But really, though, like, we really did meet at this pivotal point in individually for both of us. And we had each on our own, I feel like, decided this next step. We were renewed, you know.
Absolutely.
We were coming into it like, the next step is very big and important for us, whatever
Absolutely.
It is. I was working on my album.
Right, because Cancer for Cure was slept on, but
it was slept on,
important.
But at the same time, it actually, well, everything I do is slept
All
on.
All right.
I mean, let's be real. Like, but it's not completely slept on. I get a lot of love, and a lot of
True.
People critically, you know,
True.
Really like it. And I do have an audience, and I have been successful, and I've been able to tour and make money all these years, and I've
yeah.
been able to, I've done well. I haven't gone to the next level. Like, I think Run the Jewels is starting to happen like that now. And also, it wasn't slept on in the sense that, for me, that record was my first entry back. It started the change in my life.
like salmon. Felony forecast, others dressed to the nines like a target. Dressed like a bullseye, but a blind archer. Heart of a piranha, swimming with a blood chum water. Lock in the darkness, watching. I got this boombox, burner boy, hot shit. Burn like an LA sunset, colorful, toxic, stuff, deadly and erotic. Walk like a man, not a product. Run like a strumpet, talk to the hand sock puppet. Look at them sky ride, fuck it. We hard nothing, we don't have a tear for your bucket. Life's but a pageant, dead into the deep shit. Try to pull the curtain back, crack a police whip. Here kind of stage mom, press a little horse to display them. Cut it through my brain like a ray gun. Telling you these fuckers are shameless, so I'm with a Reagan. Look at how they bent to the training. Why would I be hanging? Now when I can chemically hang glide angle, face dive mangle, anguish. Know that some of my high language. Roll a joint, hit a frog guy till he vanquished. Bonus point, bonus point, bonus point, bonus point.
You sound like you're drowning.
Like it, right. it put me back on a path. Like it was an important record for me, and I think that you could hear it when you listen to it. And it, for a lot of people, it brought me back into the fray. Yeah. For a lot right. of people, I had drifted off, and I had. I mean, it was 5 years since I had done a record. My record label had collapsed. Real shit, I was broke. You know, I didn't know what I was going to do, and I got the opportunity. I knew I was going to do a record. I got the opportunity to do it. So that record set me on a course, and with Mike's record as well. And those two records coming out together at the same time, combined, really made this magical thing happen where me and Mike, if that hadn't happened, that was a fluke.
Another thing that we did not plan.
We didn't plan that. I didn't even know my record was coming out. I was like, I thought my record was coming out like 3 months later, you know, and I was like, hey, maybe we'll tour together at some point, you know, when
came
it makes
out
sense.
A week within one
my
of
shit
them.
My they told me your shit is coming out in a week, and he had just the record that I had produced for him, he had just dropped to rave review, and then my record was dropping, and so we were like, okay, we gotta tour together then.
Yep.
And the touring together was what made us turn into Run the Jewels.
Yeah,
I was at a show at Irving Plaza on that tour when it was like homecoming for you, like super sub. I was with like a whole bunch of old like Def Jux interns and everything.
Oh wow,
oh dope.
And it was like
I remember.
It was the it was like everybody together in the room was so happy that it was happening.
Yep.
Just like ear to ear grin, and that's when you know I think we were like, oh, this is gonna keep going.
Yeah. And it was really touching. It's been really touching to me, like really, really beyond the, you know, what I could even express. I mean, because there's a group of people who have wanted nothing more than for Mike and Jamie, who have followed us from the beginning, who have really wanted nothing more than to see us get some success.
Right.
And to see us break through and to see other people start to know about us.
But to see you guys is be happy up there.
Yes.
And to be, and that's another thing. That's you know, when you're doing something that you're legitimately enjoying. I mean, our music is not happy music. It's not. It's heavy at all. Often, you know, it's often heavy, and it can be giddy, and it can be, you know, infectious, contagious, whatever it is. But we're not UMCs when they first drop. You know what I mean? Like we're this is you know, and peace to them. They would, you know, they had their lane, but that's not our lane. We're heavier and. But we are happy on stage together and in our lives and in our careers right now. And even and it's invigorated us because we have such an intense schedule. I mean, man, we are touring 200, if not more, days out of the year and have been since 2012. And if we weren't having a great time, then we would be in an insane asylum, I think.
Yeah. What do you disagree with that people write about you guys?
What I disagree with?
Someone said that I was short. Took great offense. I mean, 5'10 is average, you know? I think that if you're going to say something, at least be, you know, honest about it. you know? Someone called Killer Mike rotund. I found that offensive.
I don't mind. I think the only thing I've ever saw disagree with recently is in a very good write-up, a very dope write-up, actually, about us. They said, you know, these guys just happened to leak their record, wink, wink. Like it was some
right, like conspiracy was, like, theory.
Like
it was contrived.
We actually were arguing on the bus before the show. Like, are we going to leave the rally? Like, we argued for an hour over the benefits or pros and the cons.
Don't lie, Mike. We're masters of deception and strategy.
We were in Birmingham, Alabama. Like, we need to leak the record. No, we need to wait.
Someone was like, oh, right. So you leak the record, and then all of a sudden, articles drop about you. It's like, well, no, we knew the articles were dropping. We leaked. We were so high when we leaked the record.
It was so, oh my God, we were on clouds when we leaked that record.
And we definitely argued.
My family's from Alabama, but I definitely would have picked another place besides Birmingham to be when the record leaked.
Mike was like, we have to do it at 4:20 a.m.
Of course.
I was like, 4:20, that's when everyone's like, looking. Yeah,
I understand, but, you know, it might not get much attention at 4:20.
Well, what are the pros and cons?
Of what?
Leaking the record.
There are no cons.
No cons now. I mean, it's too, you know, the debate is over. It worked.
I'm finna bang this bitch the fuck out. You might want to record the other way. You finna look at history being made. This motherfucker put a mirror on the goddamn screen. Let's go, LP. Huh? Champ, what we gonna do,
I'm up at midnight, I'm dipping off in my knees. I's a gun on a metal piece. I've been knees, I fist to my wrist. I'm lurking, serving all pussies who lack a purpose. I got them filled up with frizz, like Miss, I get you all recite. I'm looking, lurking on bitches, twerking for service. The bitches bagging some burger. I'm yelling, screaming, and cursing. I'm putting pistols and faces at random places, like, bitch, give it up or stand adjacent to Satan. Batman chillin', the villains is here. No Jesus is here, I hear the demons in my ear. And I want it, I need to see it, I take it. Never faking, wrap you motherfuckers up. Leave you naked, the true runners. Top tag team for two summers. Live and let live, fuck you cuz, cause that's a fool's honor. I'm walking, toting on two llamas. You niggas ass and trash and trash. Fuck it, I'm too honest. So fuck you fuck boys forever, hope I said it politely. And that's about the psyche of Jamie and Mikey. You need another pair, better, highly unlikely. And if I can't rap it, maggot, fuck, then fight me. Aaliyah for the thrill of the kill, yes, it excites me. You know your favorite rapper ain't shit, and me, I might be the closest representation of God you might see. Pay honors like your mama, young son, and take a right knee. The passion of Pop, the depth of Nas, circa 9. Mix the mind of Brad Jordan and Chuck D, and find me. I speak with the diction of Malcolm, I say a bun B. Prevail through hell, so Satan get ye behind me.
For us, I mean, we were giving the record away anyway.
Yeah.
We knew that the second that we heard rumblings that it had leaked, that we were going to drop it, because we also knew that the leak wouldn't be as well presented as what we dropped.
Sure.
We were giving the artwork and production credits,
lyrics
and the quality, that, you know, high quality. So we just knew that once that happened, we were going to do it.
Yeah.
And we actually had planned the leak for Friday. Mm-hmm. We were gonna drop it Friday because we felt that it was gonna leak, you know, because the CDs had gotten to retailers, and once that happens, it's kind of all bets are off. It's mm-hmm. gonna happen.
So yeah.
We were lucky that it only happened about 4 days before we scheduled the release. But again, like I said, we were giving it away anyway. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So the whole point of giving it away to some degree is being able to control that moment. You know. And being able to say, we're giving this to you, as opposed to waking up in the morning and coming down on Christmas Day and the kids have opened all the gifts already. Like, same gifts, but damn, I wanted to give it to you. You know, like, you've cheated me out of that feeling, kids. And for that, I am not going to raise you.
Get you out. What is it like, right that second that you leak it? Are you sitting there and then watching what people are saying about
it? Yeah, absolutely. You're watching Twitter like a fat guy watches cake. Yeah, because you're just like, oh, my God. You obsess over whether people are going to like it because you know the amount of work you put into it. This record was a lot more tumultuous to get done because we were in travels. The pressure was on. The sophomore jinx pressure is on, whether people want to acknowledge it or not. And we were just determined to push ourselves, and we wanted to see if people got it, if the antennas were up and it was received that well. And after that first hour of tweets, I went to sleep happy. I'm going to be honest. Because, and I trusted, Twitter as a barometer for me because I knew it was the actual people that have been on this 2-year ride with us.
Yeah.
Right. I knew it was the same kids that had rap music, the same kids that had RTJ1, same kids that had Cancer for Cure. So the litmus test came from a group of people that were already invested in us. So I trusted the answer, to be honest.
And a whole much larger new group of people as well who came across us through Run the Jewels.
Yeah.
Right.
Which was something that was amazing to see, for us, for guys that have been, established in our solo careers, and we encountered this whole other, there's a new fan base now that's added to what we had already that are people that legitimately didn't know who we were until Run the Jewels.
True.
But yeah, of course you're watching it, because and I agree with Mike, man. It's getting that reaction, getting the reaction that we got from people who we knew are actually going to be coming to pay to come to our shows,
right?
And who are actually sitting in their bedroom listening to our music. Getting that first, having that experience of being able to be like, here, I'm giving this to you. I'm bypassing the industry. I'm going to you here and tell me what you think is a much more powerful experience than trying to get arbiters of taste to make a statement about
five
the record
mics.
Before, which is still, and that stuff's important to us too, but it's an interesting experience to get the wave of reaction from the people who are legitimately going to be in the front row of your show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Do you think it's the same people that also had all the Pledge tapes and Fun Crusher?
I think that there are those people, and I think that there's a whole new batch of people. I mean, right. I know there is because the shows have changed.
You know?
The venues are bigger. I know that there's a new group of people that are coming.
I remember us being on tour when we toured RTJ1, and it was L and I opening for ourselves. I do 30 minutes, L do 30 minutes, then we come together as Run the Jewels, do 30 minutes.
Right.
I'd come out, do my 30, the whole crowd was receptive. I could tell the Pledge heads because they got more amped on Pledge. L would come out, whole crowd was receptive. You could tell the Fun Crusher plus kids because they got more. And then there was just always these group of kids there, usually underage because they have X's on their hands. I'm like, what? Who are these kids? Mm-hmm. They've been kind of cool the whole show.
Yeah,
they were
like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah, exactly. that was their reaction. Oh, yeah. Okay, this is cool.
Yeah.
But the minute RTJ came on, they
just burst into flames.
Just lost their mind. And it literally was, that's when I realized, Oh,
you're here for Run the Jewels.
Oh, my God.
Actually opening for Run the Jewels.
Exactly. And that's when I got it. That's when I understood that, this thing, it could grow and get bigger and be something more. And it has. And it's, it's amazing to me, man. We didn't sit down and think, Run the Jewels has a hashtag campaign. What's going to be our hashtag? Kids popped up
made that.
With first listen of Run the Jewels, and then the next 200 feeds was cars exploding.
Punches is thrown into your frontless. Oodles and noodles. Bang bullets at suckers' noodles. Last album, Voodoo, proved that we was fucking brutal. I'm talking crazy. Half past the clock is cuckoo. You rappers doodle. Baby shit, just basic boo boo. I'm talking Zulu. Massa Musa, my money buku. My beats is banging. Fuck what you rapping. Who produced you? I slap the snot. Take what you got and run the juice you. You itsy bitsy. Furry, frightened, and freaking sickly. A little prickly. Dick on display for winter swimming. Look at these kitties, Mike. I'm a rat-a-tat up for living.
I deal in dirty work, do the deed in a dash. Ditch them. I'm laying a hammer that's stuck in a fist and gun position. We run a brand where the structure's the number one commitment. It's all a joke between Monka Dratchins and coffin fitted. So we disappear in the smoke like we're fucking magicians.
No hocus pocus, you simple suckers deserve the notice. Top of the morning, my fist to your face is fucking Folgers.
We might be giants standing on little dandy shoulders.
You parked his pussy, proverbial pansy panty holders. I Jake the Snake him, DDT him in mausoleums. Macabre massacres, killing cunts in my coliseum.
They all actors, giving top and back of a BM. I fall back if your casting calls an ending in semen. Come on.
Kids are like, I listened to Run the Jewels once, and you see just like a meme of them, like a witch flying on a broom. And
a face melting.
It was like, oh my God, like these kids are insane. And it became this cultural thing for them. And I think that Run the Jewels culturally is being as shaped by audience as it is artists.
Definitely.
And that's, you know, I was a Wu-Tang culture kid. You know, mm-hmm. I was one of the guys who was a fanatic, one of the only guys running around South, you know, until they put their story there with Wu-Tang. And people were like, are you in a cult? So to be on the other side of something that feels, on a microcosm of that, but feels like that, is a very rewarding thing as an artist, you know. So I'm down with all that ratchet stuff y'all are doing, kids. All the memes, all the wildness. Just know I'm saving it. I'm planning to put together the biggest scrapbook ever.
For real.
And really, like underage kids, like high school kids.
Yeah, kids are kids.
Well, I mean, we don't check their IDs, but
I get five tweets a day that say, I'm missing you guys' show by 2 months because I'm only 17.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I've even let one kid in. In Chicago, I did let a kid in. I was just like, I can't not let you in. Uh-huh. Bring your camera, kid. You're a photographer for tonight. Yeah. The kid popped back up with a Run the Jewels tattoo on his arm.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's amazing. I mean, is that part of... So what you've been trying to do with this album is you're celebrating an era of hip-hop, rap music... when you guys were similar age to these kids? Is that
I would say that that's a part of it, you know? I think that what we do comes, like, emanates from the stuff that we were inspired by when we were getting into rap music and getting into groups, you know? It is very much Jamie and Mike's dream thing, you know, in the sense that, like, we're pulling from all of the ways that all that music made us feel, and we have a set of references that are different than what kids right now have. We have EPMD, and we have, you know, De La Soul, and we have, you know,
Ball
UGK
and Little Boys,
exactly, and NWA, and so we have those references. At the same time, we're not, you know, me and Mike are not interested in making
this is not nostalgia 101.
This is not nostalgia. Yeah, we don't make nostalgic or throwback music, but we are from where we're from. And so, and so that comes through, I think. The giddiness and the things that, like, we loved about rap groups, we sat down and talked about it when we originally did the first record, you know? We sat down and talked about our favorite rap groups and what it meant to us. And we knew and noticed that there wasn't that much of that anymore. The industry had changed, and there weren't too many groups really moving in unison. There had been crew records and things, you know, you get some records and it's not that they're bad, it's just that you can tell that these aren't friends in a room making an album. This is a record of a bunch of different people rapping on a record. And so we knew that we wanted to harken back to the things that we loved about the music.
Yeah, it's that feeling that I'm talking about,
exactly.
that you're making. And so, I mean, this is kind of I don't know if it's even possible to seriously answer this question, but, like, how do you get that done? What are the mechanics of creating that feeling?
First of all, you get in the room together.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. In the age of email it to me, I'll get it done and send it back. The first, you have to be committed to, we're going to do this in a room together.
Right.
You have to be committed that the bigger goal is more important than individual goals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and the bigger goal for us is to be an actual rap group and to affect the culture as a group, because that's not on the land. You know, I don't know if rap groups will ever be again in the same way, because there's more money to be made off individuals. Individuals are easier to control by teams, you know, and it takes a certain level of maturity and lack of ego to do it. And I don't know if you're early in your early 20s, I don't know if you're able to, you know, get past the ego of some of it all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you can, then maybe there's greatness out there. You exactly. know? I mean, I was in a group. That was how I started in this business.
Yeah.
And we had a blow up moment as well, and it was right on the verge of blowing up. There was, you know, and then we fell apart. Yeah. And it was like, that's what happens, you know, a lot of times. You know, young kids get hit with, me and Mike starting a rap group in our mid-30s, you know, we're already kind of grown. We already know who we are. We're not, there's not going to be an ego thing with us, you know, and there's not going to be, you know, we don't, there's no real surprises in the sense of like, we know how to handle ourselves. We know what's going on. And so we're able to capture that thing, you know, without it killing us, basically.
Right, right.
But I mean, really, he said it though. He's right. It's just as simple as getting in a room, and finding inspiration, waiting for lightning to strike, and following it. And yep. But it's such a simple thing that I feel like not that many people do. I just feel like people just don't. They're so connected. Everyone is so connected. We're all connected. Even when we're in a room, our brain is being sent through a screen somewhere else. Yeah. And you know, hey, great. I do it too all the time.
Right.
But there's a time and a place if you're making art that and you're making anything, music or you're writing, or there's a time and a place where if you force it, you and sit down and actually make that your world, then you can have a result that you're not going to have if you're just sort of, you know, constantly involved. And so me and Mike went out of our way doing this record to and really the last record as well to do that to separate ourselves for a little bit and hunker down for a couple of weeks at a time.
Right. So, but sort of the other part of it is to describe like the feelings that you're creating with that process, which is this aggression and this, it's funny, I wrote down the word giddy. Like to me, that's just how it works. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I'm trying to talk about rap music with people who don't know or don't like it or whatever, like the aggression is like off-putting and they don't get it. But to many people, it's invigorating and necessary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why does that feel absent? Like on the radio, and it feels like you guys are providing something that is missing.
Yeah, I think people need an outlet for aggression.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just saying as we were pulling up, I couldn't raise a child in New York. I couldn't imagine it. Not like I have anything against New York, just I as a Southerner, you know, I couldn't imagine this much stimuli going on around me all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I am a more aggressive person when I am here, just based on everything is kind of coming at you, and you need an outlet. Now, I hunt, I shoot, I fight. Mm-hmm. Like, me, personally. Like, this is what I do on a weekly basis, you know what I mean? I'll throw hands with a friend who boxes or kung fu with a friend who does. Like, I am into fighting. I am into... for lack of a better word, violence, not against people or anything, but, you know, I always have a knife on me. I always am prepared for close quarter combat. Like, I am. Like, you know, anybody who knows me knows this. I was coming through the airport. They're like, you got a knife in your bag. I was like, my bad, I didn't put it under. You know, but I am, you know, also my father was a cop, and I was raised in a very alpha male-centered family. So for me, aggression is something that, as the world progresses, and as this country progresses, it's something you're going to get to do less of just in an outward way. So you need a vehicle for that. And I think that for me, music is that. As a black boy growing up, being aggressive is dangerous. And one of the only places it was safe for me to be aggressive growing up was in rap music, you know? And because of that, I needed that outlet. It gave it to me. So whether it's my friend who is training for the NFL or me who was just knocking around needing to get some aggression out because I was in a house full of sisters, oh my God, and they'd kill me if I yelled at them, I needed an outlet. And I think Run the Jewels provides regular people with an opportunity to get that out. Like, people leave, go to lunch break, listen to Run the Jewels, come back, and don't kill their boss.
Run them jewels fast. Run them jewels fast. Run them, run them, run them, run them, run them, run them. Fuck the slow-mo. Run them, 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 run
on black on black with a ski mask. That is my crook look. How you like my styling, bruh? Ain't nobody smiling, bruh. About to turn this motherfucker up like Rikers Island, bruh. My thuggers and my cripples and my blooders and my brothers. When you niggas gon' unite and kill the police, motherfuckers? Or take over a jail? Get them COs hell. The burning of that sofa, goddamn, I love the smell. Blankets and pillow torching. Where the fuck the warden? And when you find them, we don't kill them, we just waterboard them. We killing them for freedom, cause they tortured us for boredom. And even if some good was die, fuck it, the Lord will sort them.
We out of order, your honor, you out of order. This old court is unimportant, you fuckers are walking corpses. I'm a flip wig synonym, living within distortion. A bite into a cyanide molar before you whores win. I'm a New Yorkie and I'm fucked for the jump. I wear my Yankees so tilted, I actually walk with a hunch. Look at Mikey, I think he Nikey, we are sinister sons.
Hey, we the type to preach you with a grin and a grin. And a grin. Come on.
Run them jewels fast, run them jewels fast. Run them.
I also think that there's a... that there's also a difference between, like, you're not, you're listening to our record and you're gonna grin, you're in on the fun, you know. Mm-hmm. This is not us threatening the listener,
right? right.
This is not us being, you know, this is not a dour, like, us, you know, threat, you know.
Yeah.
It's to some degree what I like about us and what I like about the vibe that happens with us on record. Is that we're like the buddy cop movies that I grew up on, you know? Yeah. We're like Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy to some degree, you know? Like, you wanted to see Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy beat someone's ass because they were funny and it was, and they were arguing. And it, so I grew up on that. I grew up on that energy. And a lot of that was in the 80s was there. And, you know, I also always loved the group dynamic. Like, I grew up listening to EPMD, and I was always wondering what, you know, listening to their dynamic, and they had one. When you listen to it, it was always like, P would be like, they broke down on the bridge, and Eric had to get out and push, you know? Or, like, one had a Corvette, one had a Samurai Suzuki. You were like, wait a second, how'd the one guy get the Corvette, and the other guy stuck with the Samurai Suzuki? But we're not getting on record and just like the same, you know, the classic Eddie Murphy stand-up routine where he says that everyone thinks that he just gets up and says, hey, suck my dick, motherfucker. Hey, fucking dick shit piss. Like, we're not getting on records and just being like, we're going to kill you.
No.
We're you know, we're having fun, and it's and we're also completely comfortable in our ridiculousness. You know?
Right.
And we understand you do want to kill people, but you can't do that. So,
yeah.
You know, let this be a way for you to kill people and then go back to work and don't kill anyone.
And then hug them.
Yep.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, there's an academic word for it that I can never keep in my head, but it's like who you are when you're listening, if you are the receiver or the giver, basically. And, like, I find that, especially as a woman who listens to hip-hop, like, if you are the person who's saying it, then you're straight.
Yeah, yeah. If you can feel like, you know, and I think that that's something that with us, that's like, like the people, the kids and the people who supported us, we feel like they're defining the group, like they're taking what we're doing.
Exactly.
And I mean, it's been really touching, actually, because a common sentiment that we've seen has been people basically saying that they feel empowered by what they're hearing. Yeah. And for us, obviously, we're projecting projecting power, you know, and it's also with a humor, and it's also not with, you know, but I've had that theme pop up over and over again, people saying that, like, you know, that we're making them feel, that's another one of the memes, you know, listen to Run the Jewels once and they show a picture of David Banner turning into the Hulk.
Oh, yeah, like, that's right.
You know, like, that's the type of thing, like, that's the type of theme that's been going on, too.
Goku. And yeah, that's
so cool. I really love that. I really think that that's cool, man.
Yeah. And again, the audience is definitely the third member of the group. I never would have thought to find memes of cars blowing up, like, as a way amazing. To describe what it, like,
I and that's just, the most tame of the,
yeah, that's the most tame, but that's genius. Yeah. Like, it's just it's amazing. Just thank you guys, man. The Jewel Runners are wow, you know, they are wow.
Yeah, and making me laugh consistently out loud. Like, there's no quicker way to my heart. Like, I was literally reading this, like, the night that we dropped it, I was just in tears. I had to go out. I had to go out to perform, but I literally was alone on the bus, sitting there drinking and like crying, like literally tears coming down my face. I almost forgot to get on stage. It took me, like, I just got there on time.
When my 17-year-old daughter has friends that like Run the Jewels, and that's cool to me, you know. To be a dad, to be cool to a 17-year-old is amazing.
Yeah, you just savor that.
Yeah, like, I'm not gonna lie. No,
gonna last,
you
and
my friends, that, you know. I'm like, wow, cool points. You know what I'm saying? So it's amazing. It's mostly boys, but it's crazy. I go to her school and you're just here, Killer Mike.
Yeah.
Run the Jewels.
I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of female fans of your guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Maybe it's a little older thing, but like, yeah. I was talking about, we need aggression, like, real, real bad. And, you know, I was also talking about how, you know, with, like, Love Again and how girls know all the words, like, girls know all the words to love in your mouth, you know? Yeah. It's like that kind of thing.
My wife.
Girls.
My wife heard the
raunchy
record.
Girls listen to raunchy,
but
you know, funny stuff,
more
too.
More than you guys do, I
when
think,
we
actually.
Did Love Again, Shay was just like, it reminds me of that Acanelli song.
Yeah.
And that was that's one of her favorite records. She probably doesn't know another Acanelli record. But that's her favorite Acanelli record. And I'm from the South, so I'm used to Two Live Crew, right. The Splat Pack, The Dogs, you know what I mean? I'm used to...
Come on, man, Too Short.
Yeah, it amazes me.
I mean, we grew up on this stuff.
The presumption of
misogyny,
of misogyny is amazing, because I grew up in an environment where women listen to Trina, who does sex talk better than pretty much anybody in the world, with the exception of a gangster boo, because Woo went ingin, you know? So my thing is, like, I trust that women are intelligent. And I get offended. I have five sisters. Again, like, you know, the odds were stacked in my favor.
And they're wrong.
And they're, yeah, but women are human. And I think that when we start saying, well, equal and human, that's across the board. You know, women enjoy sex. Different women enjoy different sex. And I trust women to be empowered enough and smart enough to say, well, I like this for the reasons I like it. And I don't need you to try to validate me by giving me a silly out. Reminiscing on our time of innocence, when we drank that Hennessy. They don't let me venison. Face fucked you in your kitchen. Fucked you like we tussling. Do you fuck your husband? Like y'all be tussling. Do you wear that muslin? Do you ask some pretty plea? Do you cross on hands and knees like you used to do for me? Oh, you such a dirty girl. The world won't let you be yourself. I won't accept nothing else. I be having none of that. You be taking all of this. Pleasure come from punishment. Your threshold astonishing. I think I'm in love again. Found my perfect drug again. Feel better than heroin. You love my alpha arrogance. Two Live Crew, the narrative. Narrative. I put that dick in her mouth all day. She got that
dick in her mouth all day.
Dick in her mouth all day.
She said she one of my.
Dick in her mouth all day. Hey, I gave her that.
Dick in her mouth all day.
She play with that.
Dick in her mouth all day.
Come on, that.
Dick in her mouth all day.
I think I'm in love again.
Love again.
Here I am, my love. Just like when we first hooked up. Feeling like I'm animal. Feeling like you're edible. Bendable. I've been away. I don't have too much to say. You say it anyway. I say take your shit off. I'm not playing, babe. Little freak. What you are is so unique. Smart and full of filth and joy. You've been with some little boys. Now you're with a grown-up man. One who actually understands. Kid gloves are not on my hands. I will never condescend. Now spread yourself. Smile a bit. Put the outline of my shit. Oh my god, I love this chick. I must put my tongue in this. Into every space I go. Give me everything you am. She said no, you give me first. That was like a day ago. 8 a.m. Still got my
dick in the mouth all day. I just, man, I'm just happy that our audience gets it. Yeah, I'm just happy. Because I don't care, quote unquote, if you don't get it. I care that I have to debate with you about not getting it.
You know what?
Like a guy hit me with I'm unfollowing you because I've been a fan a long time and that's what's up. And I was like, first of all, you're a guy. Second of all, I don't care because I just had 8 girls that say they love the record. Follow my timeline. You know,
third of all, our intention is clear. We know our intention. Like, we listen, real story, we made that record and it didn't have Boo on it. And we went and got Boo because we knew what we needed for that record.
Exactly.
And we knew when we made that record, it wasn't complete yet. We were listening to it as a complete record. And here's a dirty secret. It actually made it onto the physical copy as the record without Boo.
Okay.
Because it was, we had to submit. It was too, yeah. But we were like, you know what? No, we need to finish this song. It's not done. And we went and we got Boo. And when she finally did what we asked her to do, it became the record. And we immediately replaced the record on the digital version because we knew that that was really what the record was. The record was not me and Mike. The record was me, Mike, and Boo. And we're not, we have good intentions. I know that we are not being misogynist because we are not A, being completely serious, and B, we're talking about fucking here.
Yeah, I don't even.
I'm sorry. Like, you know, if you're offended by my language, then I'm sorry. But you're not gonna tell me that being raw or being filthy is misogyny.
I just hate that America's becoming such a politically correct place that, you know, I grew up one of those kids that sneaked and watched porn. I listened to Richard Pryor and Red Fox. You know, my grandparents raised me, so they had Red Fox records, Richard Pryor. I was.
You should have seen some of the shit we were exposed to.
Exactly.
I mean, come on, NWA?
Yes.
Like, you know, world's biggest dick.
Exactly. But even
I was like seven.
I knew those records didn't even come from NWA. Like, when I heard the samples, I knew where they came from because, again, my Dolemite. Grandparents raised me. So I listened to Dolemite. I listened to Moms Mabley. I listened to Rudy Ray Moore. I listened to this stuff. So I had a cultural reference that understood people like perversion.
Yeah.
I'm just tired of being at a time in this country where everyone seems to have reverted to this weird-ass secular puritism. Like, it's stupid.
Well,
it's
and it's also, in my opinion, not real.
Yeah.
In the sense that there's a fabricated stylistic morality that has you know haunted everybody's sort of public intellect.
And it's sickening.
You know, recently, and it's like, look, man, I'm a fucking grown up man. You're full of shit. I'm sorry. Like, what, you know that sort of. That, you know, hands in the air, oh my God, let me wave myself with a fan sort of, it's like, look, man, honestly, I'm sorry. Like, but tell Bukowski that he's a misogynist, you know?
Personal branding and I think trying to get laid, probably.
That's what it's all about.
Well.
But I love the fact
we do
love it. Thanks
get
for
laid me. And we wrote about it.
Yeah. My wife immediately said, oh, that's not me.
Yeah,
because the shtick was, I think we were going to, Elle was like, yo, just tell Shay's about her. I was like, Shay's not going to believe that.
Shay, don't put me on blast, man.
Shay said, that's not me.
Oh, man. What's that video going to be like?
Hopefully like a Luke Skywalker video.
Yeah.
It's hopefully going to be just like a 2 Live Crew video.
Yep.
How does, like, because of all the touring, but also because it is so renewing and exciting. Like, how do your families feel about all this?
Oh, my wife comes out. We don't have any children together. I brought 4 children to the relationship, so we have 4 children. But luckily, we have built-in babysitters, and that, you know, we have grandparents and we have sisters and you know their moms. So you know, it's very difficult for me to be away from the children. It really is. But thankfully, because of cell phones and Skype and me just, you know, calling them and them calling me, we stay together. And when I'm home, my focus is on them. Like, it's, you know, it's hard to get me on the line as quickly when I'm home because I care about making sure that they know they're cared about. And I'm also from a traditional family where fathers work really hard. So it's kind of like in the fabric of my family, the children are taught to understand your dad's going to have to go out to work. Doesn't mean your dad doesn't love you. You guys are still going to be there. Like, I sponsored a trip to Six Flags last week. They sent the picture. They had a great time. But for my wife, it gets difficult because, you know, it's her. We run a business together. A lot of it falls on her. We have a shop, barbershop. We do rental properties and that stuff. So I'm you know, it takes back. For me, it's hard to leave her with that. But I married a champion of a woman. And Shayna, you know, people who follow me on social media always hear me tout about her. She's just wonderful. But it's hard to be away from some of the older members of my family. My grandmother passed 2 years ago. God bless the dead. Her sisters are around. It's difficult not seeing them as much. But I'm out here getting it. You know, and, yeah. and my job is to, as a man, you know, traditionally from my family standpoint, is to provide. And I'm going to do that until I can anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for me, it's actually been a little tough for the last couple of years. I have really not really been, I don't think, a particularly good son or brother or uncle. And I feel bad about that. I do. I struggle with that because, you know, it's been going on now for a couple of years and I have not been around. But my family loves me and they understand, you know, they understand that I went through a sort of, I got crushed to earth to a degree and I had to be renewed. And I was, and when I came out of that period of uncertainty, and I took stock of what was going on, I knew that I had to dedicate myself to working as hard as I possibly could for the next couple of years. Yeah. And that's some personal shit. Like, I just knew that I had to do that. And and my nieces are getting bigger and I don't know them as well as I want to, but I'm lucky to have, you know, I know that and my girlfriend is a touring musician as well. And so I don't see her for months at a time. She's on tour right now. She's in, you know, she's in Europe right now.
You gonna
now.
Tell them the band?
No, I'm gonna let her live.
Shouts out to him though. Shouts yeah. out.
So that's, you know, that can be tough, but you know, it's okay. This is what we asked for, and you know, it's a great gig if you can get it. And I'm just, you know, I know that it's a touchy subject for me. I really feel like I got to make more time for my family very soon. So.
Yeah, the only thing that suffices for me is that in spirit and bond, I found a brother in Jamie. And there are times where it gets incredibly lonely on the road for both of us. And a lot of times when you see each other, just look at each other and hug each other on stage, it's because I know I'm up here with someone that loves me. And loves me in the way that my blood brother, which I never had, would love me. And as hard as it is to be away from blood relatives a lot of times, the only comfort is that I know that on the bus with me, with Jamie, with Gabe, DJ Trackstar, with Despot, that I am, with Ian, our tour manager, I am on the road with a group of people who in a very spiritual and way love me like we are family. And that's the only thing that has allowed me to stay sane, you know, and not curled up in a bunk crying, you know, depressed. And that's the only thing that invigorates. So it's like, we're going to come off tour and we're all going to go to Costa Rica for Jamie's birthday.
Nice.
You know, I mean, because we're going to work together. We're going to get angry. We're going to talk crazy to each other. We're going to give great shows. Then we're going to go to Costa Rica and laugh about it like brothers do. But it's no way I cannot acknowledge the fact that the group of people that I tour with are essentially a spiritual family for me. They are the bedrock that allows me to still be sane when I do get home to my children and wife.
Word up. I'm also going to stab you. we'll laugh about it.
We'll fight close
it's
quarters.
It's going to be hilarious.
We'll fight close quarters. We'll do it.
It's going to be completely hilarious. You're going to love it.
Oh, my God. Like, all things being equal, I'm going to assume that you would encourage somebody else if this is the career path, the artistic route they want to go, you'd be like, yeah, go do this.
I told my stupid son that yesterday.
I don't know.
I have a 20-year-old son who I just, he's a bright and brilliant and creative boy. He's in college right now taking courses, and he's in a technical college taking barber's courses so he can, you know, come earn money the easy way, working in his pop shop, hopefully on one. But he looks at me squarely in the eyes, a skater too, yesterday, and says, "Dad, I really want to be a rapper." And I just put my head down. just right in front of the barbershop, I just put my head down in my hand, just exactly the same way my dad did. And I looked at him and I said, "Well, I'm going to tell you what my dad told me." And he looked at me and thought he was going to get the most beautiful advice ever. And I said, "They call them starving artists for a reason. I hope you make it. I don't have any help to give you. I have all the advice in the world. But when I was 20 years old, I came to my dad with a demo and said, this is what I want to do. You're coming to me with a want. That's not good enough."
Mm,
Mm. And I told him, if you want to be a rapper, go figure out how to do
and
it.
I was, and I did it at 15. Yeah. I mean, you know, like at 15, I told my mother, your white son wants to, who just got kicked out of two high schools, has chosen a career in rap. Thank you very much. So I'm
going
to be a rapper. You know that those crazy people you see on the TV that you're scared of?
I'm gonna be one of those.
So, hey, is this cool? You know, let's just do it. You know.
Yeah,
so, I mean, I believe 100% in doing whatever the fuck you want to do.
Absolutely.
And you know, the only alternative. Look, if you can figure out an alternative, the only thing that everyone else is presenting to you is a life of grinding servitude to a ridiculous and permanent lower spiritual experience of working and slaving, you know, and for someone else.
Yep,
and I hate to reduce it to that, because sometimes jobs are great and sometimes you can do great things. But for the most part, that's your other choice, buddy. So if you can figure something out, great, man.
Yep.
Great.
I hope Malik proves me wrong. Mm-hmm. I really do.
He will. The way that you proved your parents wrong, the way I proved mine wrong. You know,
well, you hope he will. You don't know he will, but you hope he, because it's hard. My kids haven't had it hard. My kids have been coddled and spoiled. You know what I mean? And he told me that. I know I've been spoiled. Okay. Welcome to the desert, young man. I'll see you when you cross.
He was also
getting $100 from me at the time. I was giving him $100.
Here you go, son. Buy a chain.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a rapper, you're going to need to start spending some money on some stupid shit.
But I'm very proud of him. With that said, I'm very proud of the young man he's becoming, you know, and I hope it works out for him.
I mean, it must be a great feeling to have your kid want to do what you do.
It's definitely not. No, I'm flattered, though, and I love him. I love him.
Mike knows who he is and what a bastard and weirdo he is.
I am.
And he knows how debaucherous and strange his rap career has been, and he's picturing his child becoming one of him.
Exactly. Just because it's my child and I'm afraid for my child.
Mike knows that he's been a scumbag.
Yep. My child does not have that in him at all, and I... You know, you're scared for your children. Every parent is. You're scared for your children.
Shit, I'm scared for your children.
Uncle Jamie, with an uncle like Jamie, you should be.
Nah, I'm going to be the cool uncle, man. I'm going to wait to see what you say, and then I'm going to contradict you behind your back.
That's right. That's what great uncles do.
Yeah.
Let me give you some new rappers I like.
Okay, cool.
Who I like a very lot. I like Scotty ATL.
Me too.
I like Ra Ra, who's also from, both of them are Decatur guys, but they are giving me a renaissance of the Atlanta version of Southern music that I love. So if you get a chance to pick up High End Low Life by Ra Ra or Spaghetti Junction, or Road to Spaghetti Junction and Spaghetti Junction by Scotty, pick that up. And I just toured with a group called Outfit TX out of Dallas. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for great Texas music, and Outfit TX has some amazingly dope Texas music. It reminds me of riding around listening to DSR, Fat Tom Tom, Fat Beezy, Tom Tom and Tuck. So those are the three guys I'm endorsing right now. I'm endorsing the group, Outfit TX, Ra Ra, and Scotty ATL, and a special honorary shout out to SL Jones, who's out of my crew, but you guys definitely should know about SL Jones.
Word.
All of that. We interviewed the outfit at South by Southwest.
Woo. Oh, they're great dudes, man. Great dudes.
They literally are dope, like a hardcore rap group with choreography moves like Scroove and Scrap Love. Yeah. I love it. Jamie, I'll let you take the next.
You want to do Tag the Jewels? How did that even happen?
Tag the Jewels was put together by my manager, longtime friend and business partner, Michu Zigwe, who I've been working with for 20 years. And he came up with the idea, and
his beautiful, wonderful girlfriend.
Him and his girlfriend who came up with the idea, and we're obviously big fans of street art and of art in general. And I grew up in New York with, you know, trains covered in graffiti. I grew up learning about hip hop culture through, you know, in that way, like, you know, admiring the ethos and the ideas about style and art that the graffiti culture brought to it, and it was very important to me. So we kind of put the idea, they put the idea out there just to these different artists and galleries, and the response was overwhelming. I mean, we didn't have any money, there was no money involved or anything. We were just saying, hey, we'd love for you to, if you're inspired to do a, you know, to interpret this. And the reaction was just mind blowing. I mean, we had pieces up in Saudi Arabia, we had pieces up in Malaysia, we had pieces up in
Australia,
Nigeria, in Poland.
It was supposed to be 15 pieces. We're at about 30 now, I think.
Yeah, people have taken it upon themselves to do them, and I'm talking about it's all over the world. And that's mind-blowing to me. Like, you can't manufacture that type of support, you know? Nope. This is not, we're not two guys here with some million-dollar fucking marketing budget. You know, this is like people just responded to it, and they went all out, and it was, and the quality of the pieces that are coming in are just,
that's what I was,
like,
gonna
really
say,
crazy, like, really,
Jesus.
There's some top level shit in there, you know.
Yeah.
And where it's happening, you know, there's peace in Russia. There's, you know, it's like fists in the gun up in Dubai, and you know, like, it's insane to me.
And it means something, you know. That's what
I mean. That's, yeah, it means something.
What does it mean?
As I've traveled the world, the story isn't over for what it fully means. But as I've traveled the world, the only rappers that I've seen present on every continent, everywhere, have been Ice Cube, Tupac, and Wu-Tang Clan.
Mm-hmm.
That's significant to me because those people are culture shifters. And I always wondered, what did it take to get there? And that's why I say it means something. I'm not totally sure everything it means yet, but it does put different people.
We don't know
people,
what it means, because they're telling us. They're growing. You know?
Exactly. So. But what it means in the immediate is that different people from different cultures that are perceived as different are all vibrating on the same frequency at one time.
Yeah.
I have seen at Jamie and my show, more white and black friends come together. Now, I'm not saying, you know, we're Martin Luther King, we brought everyone together. I'm just saying it's a weird coincidence that the two guys that always show up in Nashville with signs, and we were like, what do you guys do? Well, we work at a print shop together. Their friendship has been built around working together in grunt work, listening to Run the Jewels, and thinking of the most outlandish way of representing that at concert. So I don't know what the end goal of what it means is, but what I do know is that the pistol, the fist and chain, the pistol pointed at with fingers, has become something of solidarity and almost like a club for people. What's going to happen out of that, we don't know, and that's the excitement. But I love the fact that people who don't look alike, who aren't familiar with one another culturally, are together on the same vibration at one point. That's a significant thing.
It's huge. Well said. It is. That's exactly what it is. And the fist and the gun and Run the Jewels, going back, we've talked about it a little bit, but it makes me think. It means something. We're seeing it happen. I think it's that me and Mike have managed to find a decent way to express something symbolically that kids need to be able to say simply.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm taking this life. You know? Yep. I'm taking it over.
Yep.
I'm you know, and that's really at the core of the aggression. That's really what it is. And that's why the fist and the gun has become this feeling almost, you know, that people can share, and it's a symbol. And a symbol is a reduction of a lot of different concepts, and it is the communication of that in a really natural and organic way. And I think that that's what's happening. I think that people are defining that energy and using that. And, you know, that's why we always say, like, we're not going to define it, the story, for everybody, because we're still seeing it unfold, you know.
Yeah.
For us, it's a shock to see all these people reacting this way and putting pieces up. That the creation of art around that, I mean, it's one thing to tweet at me.
Yeah.
It's another thing if you're literally sharing your artistic vision and your soul, and you're integrating it with something that with us.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And it's mind blowing.
Absolutely.
Mind blowing. Yeah.
And we're so appreciative for the artist.
Yeah.
And we're so appreciative for the people, you know, because, yeah, I mean, we were kids that grew up with hip-hop. Hip-hop, you know, it's not only a few years older than us, but you will learn that it's emceeing, it's b-boying, it's DJing, and it's graffiti. And the fact that Run the Jewels has served as a catalyst to kind of, like, my kids don't know graffiti is associated with rap, but now they do. You know what I mean? Now they do. Now they understand that street art and rap go together. They were formed together. They belong together. It's just, it feels great to me. Just that the rap nerd kid that I am on the inside. And I'm very happy to be a part of whatever this thing is and becoming. I'm happy.
Well, we are very appreciative.
Thank you.
And I know that Ali is very appreciative and very sad that he couldn't be here.
Shouts out, Ali.
As are we.
Legend.
Yep, and a big part of the motivation, the group you had definitely was a, like, we sat down with this whole record, like, yo, we got to do Midnight Marauders.
Actually, I
we
said low-end theory.
I mean, yeah, well, low-end theory, but it has to be a progression. We can't rest on our laurels. Yeah.
Well, thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
Love.